A note to listeners, this episode contains adult language. Late 2005, Cupertino, California. Steve Jobs stands in his personal conference room with his inner circle of Apple executives. Tony Fadell, who leads Apple's iPod division, hands Jobs what looks like an iPod in his hands. The device has a small screen, smooth silver edges, and a large track wheel. Jobs takes his thumb off the track wheel and looks at Fadell.
How the hell do you use this thing to dial a number?
Well, you can use the track wheel to scroll through an address book very easily. Look,
I know that, but that's not what I asked. People are going to have to dial unknown numbers at some point, like 911. It takes way too long to scroll through the track wheel to select numbers. This is basically an ancient rotary phone.
Fadell looks stumped. His team has been working on modifying the iPod into a phone for the last several months.
But the iPod is so popular. People are already used to the track wheel. This wouldn't be such a leap.
The iPod is Apple's biggest product. They're on track to sell 20 million iPods in 2005. But Jobs shakes his head.
This just isn't going to work. Johnny, let's see what you've got.
Johnny Ive, Apple's chief design officer, pulls out a prototype of P2, the codename given to his team's latest project. The whole front of the device is a screen. There's no keyboard or track wheel. There's one small round button at the bottom. He clears his throat.
So we've been working on the multi-touch idea using the technology from Fingerworks. It's still early days.
Jobs nods. In early 2005, Apple acquired a Delaware company called Fingerworks, which had been developing a technology that allowed a screen to sense movements from more than one finger at a time. What we've come up with is a keyboard that appears and disappears, which you can use to type. I types a text message. A digital keyboard appears at the bottom half of the screen. Every time he touches a letter, it enlarges on the screen to show which one he's picked.
Nice. And building on Fingerworks technology, we've developed a way to swipe away content. And there's more. Watch this.
I swipes to the left to scroll through photos from the phone's camera reel. It's slow and still a bit buggy, but it works.
Real. That looks great.
The group is impressed, but one executive frowns.
I think we do still need to have a keyboard. Look how popular BlackBerry is.
Jobs shakes his head.
No, a hardware keyboard seems like an easy solution, but it's constraining. Think of all the innovations we'd be able to develop with a keyboard on screen.
Ive speaks up.
Steve, look, I know it looks sexy, but we still aren't sure we can pull off the engineering required to make this work. The software needed is unreal. We'd have to fit a whole Macintosh computer into this phone.
Jobs looks around the room. This is a bet the company moment. Jobs can risk Apple's future betting on something that might not even be possible. Or he could stick to the safe route and go with the iPod phone. Jobs holds up the touchscreen phone.
We all know this is the one we want to do. So let's make this work.
Not only will Apple make the touchscreen work, it'll become the biggest selling product of all time. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In the last episode, Research in Motion's BlackBerry reached world domination with a mobile phone that allowed consumers to get their email messages on the go. BlackBerry charmed Wall Street in Washington, then won over the average consumer. But at this moment, the marketplace is not the company's problem. It's the costly legal settlements and massive internal problems. But Jobs is about to deliver a game changer that will force BlackBerry to fight for its very survival. This is Episode 2, The Jesus Phone. March 2006, RIM headquarters in Waterloo, Canada. RIM co-CEO Jim Balsillie looks exhausted as he gazes around at the board members. He's got bags under his eyes, and his shirt is crumpled. Balsillie makes eye contact with his co-CEO, Mike Lazaridis. Lazaridis gives him a grim nod. Balsillie clears his throat.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. As you know, I've been hard at work hammering out a deal with NTP's lawyers.
The board members nod. For the last 6 years, RIM has been fighting a legal battle against a technology company called NTP, which claims that RIM is infringing on its patent for wireless email. The saga reached a tipping point a few weeks ago, when the judge gave them 30 days to reach a settlement. If they don't reach an agreement with NTP, the judge will shut down RIM's entire U.S. operation.
We've made progress, and we've got a preliminary agreement.
I know.
Lazaridis gives him a weak smile. Balsillie keeps going.
We've managed to persuade NTP not to go after the royalties they wanted. But now what NTP wants is a lump sum of money.
One board member pipes up.
How much are we talking here?
Balsillie looks down at the table.
$612.5 million. That's crazy. That's more than $500 million.
Balsillie raises his hands.
I know. Trust me. I tried to get them down, but they won't budge. And I think we should settle, even at that price.
Balsillie looks at Lazaridis, queuing him up.
For what it's worth, I agree with Jim.
Balsillie studies the faces of the other board members. They rarely disagree with the CEOs, but he still needs their approval.
Now, what would you do if you were in my shoes? Would you risk shutting down our business for God knows how long to keep fighting this thing? Or would you pay up and move on?
One board member brings his hands together in front of him thoughtfully.
I'd pay. It's a lot of money, but the business is doing great. BlackBerries are selling like hotcakes.
Consider this a cost of doing business.
Someone else pipes up.
I agree.
And so, RIM officially settles with NTP. Balsillie and Lazaridis put the whole patent fiasco behind them to focus on their booming business. But they don't yet know that another challenge is right around the corner. Summer 2006, Apple's headquarters in Cupertino, California. Jobs is in Ive's industrial design office, looking over the iPhone's latest features. He's been here every day for the last few months, going through every little detail on the phone with the engineers. Ive brings over the latest prototype.
All right, Steve, here it is. As you suggested, we've added the sensor that figures out when your phone is by your ear so the touchscreen won't get activated by your earlobes. And we've also added this bounce feature, so when you scroll to the end of a web page, the screen bounces. That way you know you're at the end of a web page.
Jobs nods approvingly.
Good. I'm still worried about the phone butt dialing or playing music when it's in your pocket.
Ive holds up his finger.
Well, we could always have an on and off button.
No, we need a more elegant solution.
One designer looks up.
What if there was a swipe to unlock? You know, in airplane toilets, you have to slide the lock across to lock the door. Well, what if we had a lock like that on the phone that you had to slide your thumb across to unlock?
That's genius. I love it. Let's do that.
Great. I'll get to work.
Jobs holds the phone in his hand and turns to Ive.
There's just one more thing. These edges, they're too square. It feels too masculine and hard.
Ive looks down at the sleek rectangle with its sharp edges.
I agree. I can't believe I missed that. The corners should be curved and smooth. I'll make that change.
Jobs nods and puts his hand on Ive's shoulder.
I'll be back tomorrow to see.
Jobs is known for his tight deadlines, and he's pushing his team hard. He's got a lot riding on this phone, and he needs it to be perfect. September 2006, Apple HQ in Cupertino, California. Jobs storms down the hallway, clutching a prototype iPhone in his hand. There are only 4 months until he plans to reveal the iPhone to the world, and he is not happy. He rounds the corner and marches right into Fidel's office. Jobs holds up the phone indignantly. Its plastic screen is covered in scratch marks from the keys Jobs keeps in his pocket.
Look at this! What's with the screen?
Fidel responds calmly.
Well, Steve, we have a glass prototype, but it fails the 1 meter drop test 100 out of 100 times.
Jobs interrupts.
I just want to know if you're going to make the thing work.
Fidel is a little taken aback, but he's used to Jobs' outbursts.
Listen, I agree. Glass feels better, but it just breaks too easily.
Well, then find a stronger glass.
Fidel's mouth widens.
But, Steve, even if we do find some magic glass that doesn't break, it'll mean we have less than a year to manufacture millions of units with the new material.
Jobs walks closer to Fidel, his eyes flashing anger.
I refuse to send out the iPhone looking like this.
So, Jobs sets out to find some miracle glass. Glass strong enough to survive a meter-high drop test. A friend connects him to a New York glass company called Corning. Corning has a prototype of a super strong glass they call Gorilla Glass. Jobs meets with them and convinces them to manufacture the stuff en masse. He orders as much as they can make. The race to release the iPhone is on. January 2007, Waterloo, Canada. Mike Lazaridis is at home working out on the treadmill. He's watching TV as he sweats. Just then, a news report catches his eye.
San Francisco, we got the first look today at what Apple says is the next big thing, the new must-have device that takes the iPod even further, we are told.
Okay, Lazaridis grabs the remote to turn it up. The screen cuts to Steve Jobs pacing across a stage, dressed in his usual black turtleneck. Jobs has got a glass rectangle in his hand. Lazaridis listens closely.
Three things. A widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device. These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone.
Lazaridis quickly forgets about his workout. He's amazed by what Jobs is presenting. It's a feat of engineering. So much so that the press is already calling it the Jesus phone.
How did they do that?
Lazaridis can't believe they've managed to put a full web browser into such a slim device. And it's got email, an iPod, a camera, and full phone functions.
Most impressive of all, it's a touchscreen. Then, Jobs takes a not-so-subtle dig at BlackBerry when he compares his new iPhone to other smartphones on the market.
They all have these plastic little keyboards on them. The problem is that they're not so smart and they're not so easy to use.
Lazaridis doesn't have time to get mad because he watches as someone else joins Jobs up on screen. It's an AT&T executive. Lazaridis is stunned. He can't believe AT&T is throwing its weight behind the iPhone. Lazaridis picks up his BlackBerry and calls bossily.
Jim, are you seeing this Apple announcement?
Yeah, I watched it.
They put a full web browser on that thing. Are we going to lose AT&T as a customer?
Look, this just means the U.S. market's going to be tougher, but it'll be okay.
Lazaridis isn't convinced.
I don't know, Bill. These guys are really, really good. This is different.
We'll be fine. Look, they don't even have a keyboard on that thing. Business people aren't going to want to type emails without a proper keyboard. It'll take too long. And they aren't going to like tapping away at a screen with their fingers.
Lazaridis chews his lip.
That's a good point. And the iPhone battery life is a joke.
Lazaridis starts to calm down. Plus, it helps when he learns that the iPhones cost $499, a very expensive toy. The latest model, BlackBerry Pearl, costs $350, or $199 with a contract. And it helps that lots of companies pay for their employees' BlackBerries. As Lazaridis digests the news of Apple's phone, he starts to feel confident that the BlackBerry is superior. Instead of worrying about the competition, Balsillie and Lazaridis focus on scrambling to fulfill orders. They can't keep up with the demand for BlackBerries. RIM is adding more than a million BlackBerry subscribers a quarter. Its latest phone, the Pearl, is on track to sell 6.4 million handsets in 2007. RIM is on top of the world, and its stock is at an all-time high. But 2 months later, disaster hits. An internal investigation reveals that RIM's been doing some very funny accounting. It's common practice for executives to be paid in stock options, which gives them the option to buy shares at a set price and date. But this investigation reveals that RIM backdated many of those stock options, changing the prices to make the recipient more money. In doing so, they violated the SEC and Canadian Stock Exchange rules and gave executives $250 million worth of ill-gotten compensation. It's a huge public embarrassment for Balsillie and Lazaridis, not to mention illegal. And it seriously tarnishes their reputation with investors. The SEC and Ontario Securities Commission quickly launch an investigation into RIM, and that jeopardizes the relationship between the two CEOs. May 2007, New York City. Lazaridis collapses into a seat in his hotel suite. He's just undergone a grueling day of grilling by SEC regulators. He loosens his tie and slides further into the chair. It's Balsillie.
How did it go?
Lazaridis exhales sharply.
How do you think it went? It was a nightmare.
What happened?
Look, the lawyers told us not to discuss the case while we're under investigation. But it's bad, Jim.
Well, I'm going to tell them exactly what I told you. I was involved in the backdating, but I didn't mean to violate securities rules, and I didn't know what I was doing.
Lazaridis's face reddens.
This is rubbish, Jim. I don't know anything about finance and stock options. My job is engineering and innovation. I don't know why they dragged me into this mess with you.
Balsillie is silent. Lazaridis grows heated.
I just can't believe you would let this happen, and right after we've settled the NTP mess, too. Now I have to spend days talking to regulators and do a whole bunch of extra work from a mess you made.
Equal partners. Until now, Lazaridis blames Balsillie for the stock option disaster. Now, RIM must come up with an answer to Apple's iPhone. And that will be a tough task when its co-CEOs are under fire and no longer trust each other.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind.
Summer 2007, Waterloo, Canada. Lazaridis is sitting at his desk on the third floor of the RIM offices. He's in a building called RIM 4. The offices are dull gray glass and cement buildings with basic utilitarian chairs and wood desks, a world apart from the sleek metal object in his hands. Lazaridis looks down at the iPhone and begins unscrewing the back. Apple put it on sale in June. Now Lazaridis wants to see what's inside. There's a group of engineers eagerly waiting for him to open it up and show them the guts.
Wow. They put a Mac inside this thing.
Finally, Lazaridis holds up the back and the engineers lean in for a closer look.
Damn, that's impressive. I can't believe they got all that processing power into this little phone. What is it, like 700 megabytes of memory?
Lazaridis nods grimly.
Yep. 22 times the computing power of the BlackBerry. I mean, they've got a full web browser on it.
The engineer leans back.
No wonder it's been selling so well.
Lazaridis shoots him a look.
Why? I'm just saying.
Lazaridis flips the phone over and looks at the sleek glass screen.
I still can't believe people want a phone without a keyboard. I can hardly type on this thing.
But he knows that's not really an issue. He underestimated the iPhone, and that was a big mistake. The iPhone is a serious threat.
If we want to win, we have to fix everything that's wrong with the iPhone.
Usually, he'd be having this conversation with Balsillie, but he no longer trusts his partner. Lazaridis and Balsillie had to testify in front of regulators over the stock options debacle. Lazaridis felt that Balsillie threw him under the bus and made him look bad. And now, RIM needs to scramble to compete with a divided front. Late August 2007, a Manhattan hotel room. Lazaridis stands in front of executives from Verizon and British carrier Vodafone. Lazaridis feels his clicker in his sweaty palm as he clicks onto the next slide. He glances at his audience. More than a few of them are checking their phones. He clears his throat.
So, as I was saying, the BlackBerry Bold has an improved keyboard, an innovative trackpad, and a large screen.
He points at the screen, which has a prototype picture of a large black device with bulky keys. It looks exactly like every other BlackBerry model.
This is the best phone RIM has ever produced.
Crickets. The industry has been abuzz with the iPhone, and all anyone will talk about is touchscreens. At this point, RIM controls 38% of the U.S. smartphone market. Apple has just 4%. But Lazaridis knows, as does everyone in the room, that in technology, you have to constantly evolve or risk becoming yesterday's floppy disk. So Lazaridis hurries to Plan B. He clicks ahead to another section. Projected on the screen is a black glass-covered phone. It's surrounded by lightning. Lazaridis gestures to the image.
This is Storm. Phone and computer companies have experimented with touchscreen devices for years, but none can match the magic touch of Storm.
One suit leans in for a closer look. Lazaridis pulls out a prototype and presses a finger on the glass screen.
There aren't going to be any typos on this thing.
Lazaridis' finger hovers like a computer mouse over a digital version of BlackBerry's keyboard on the phone touchscreen. He presses a digital key and the entire screen clicks down like a giant button. It replicates the tactile experience of tapping away at a BlackBerry keyboard.
We have combined the navigation of a computer mouse with the secure feel of a BlackBerry keyboard. We've brought the best of BlackBerry to the touchscreen. This is the next smartphone wave.
The executives are grinning. They love the prototype. Verizon gives RIM a contract for Storm. The only problem? RIM can't actually make Storm yet. They don't have any touchscreen technology. Apple developed its multi-touch technology for 4 years before launching the iPhone. Now, RIM has to figure out how to make a touchscreen in 9 months. On the next episode, BlackBerry launches Storm, its answer to the iPhone. But will their new touchscreen be the lightning strike they need to get RIM back in the game?
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is Episode 2 of BlackBerry versus iPhone for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. I'm your host, David Brown. Natalie Robomed wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez. For Wondery.
Once upon a beat.
Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the new kids and family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.